Hey, it's me, Colin Moriarty, proprietor of the podcast network Colin's Last Stand, co-host of the mega-popular PlayStation podcast Sacred Symbols, and also co-host of another show that I think you may enjoy, a retro and nostalgia-themed romp called Knockback. I co-host the show with my brother, Emmy Award-winning Sesame Workshop lead animator and character designer Dagan Moriarty. And we post a new episode each and every week, celebrating all that mattered most to us growing up, from the 70s, 80s, 90s, and beyond. On one episode, we'll talk about an old video game, and on another, a classic movie. And another yet, stories from our past, delving into all things old school. If you want to tickle those nostalgic muscles within you, remember the glory days of years gone, and have a lot of laughs while doing it, join us for Knockback, with new episodes posted each and every Thursday on your favorite podcast service.
This is Dead in Sports.
This is the place where sports opinions collide, Dead End Sports. I'm your host, Kenneth B. Inch. Joining me, we got BZ430.
What up, though?
Representing Detroit, as always.
You know it.
We got Nikki Duce.
What's going on?
And FIFO is not here this week with us, but we hope you're having a good time and enjoy the brother. He'll be back next week. And man, you know, you guys see him on the Zoom virtually. We got Shelton J.
What's happening? What's happening, man? How y'all?
Wow, man. We're doing great, man. And, you know, go ahead and take it from here, brother. Introduce our special guest this week.
Man, I'm really excited about this guest, man. I'm telling you, if you logging on, tell somebody to log on with you. Man, this dude is one of the first black mobile quarterbacks that I ever saw in my life that really impacted me. And made me watch football the way it should be watched. And even let's go back even further than that. You switched sports, and it's crazy because I just realized today that you were picked 52nd, 53rd, or 52nd in the baseball draft, 99. And then you were picked 53rd by the Cowboys in the second round in 2001, which is ridiculous to me anyway. So we got the man, the myth, the legend, Quincy Carter with us, man. How you doing, bro?
I'm good, man. I'm good, man. How y'all doing?
Chilling, man. Yeah, good brother. To see you, bro.
Good, man. Man, like I said, I'm just excited that you're on here. I told him that I've been texting with you, but to talk to you, man, I was starstruck for a minute.
Oh, good.
So I had to get right, man. But let's get started with you, though, man. So with you went to Southwest, correct?
Yeah.
And I saw where you originally signed to go to Georgia Tech. What made you what happened to make you switch it over?
Honestly, man, you know, baseball was always my first love. Thinking back at that particular time, man, I wanted to give baseball a good try, and I knew I couldn't play both sports, at full capacity. So if I had a chance to go ahead and do one professionally, why not go ahead and give baseball that shot, right off the bat? So that was my initial thinking, and then that $450,000 didn't hurt that decision either. So, yeah, man, that was my thinking. I kind of signed a three-year deal, so at the end of 3 years, I could still have an option to go back and play in football. So I just left my options open on that end. And then after 3 years, I decided, man, I need to give football another try because I was missing it so much.
So when you took 3 years off of football, so when you went back initially, what made you switch over to Georgia instead of staying with Georgia Tech?
One name, and that's Joe Hamilton.
Yes, sir.
But, yeah, I remember.
And, initially I was going to compete with him right out of high school, and he had already 1 year on me, going in as a freshman. But he had two good years there, two solid years, had the program going in the right direction. So it was only common sense, man, that I get another school serious consideration, man, because I always wanted to stay home. And then, Georgia had just got off probation, which is the only reason, some of the reasons why I didn't give Georgia a big chance coming out of high school, because they were on probation and I wasn't, you know, down for going to school and not going to a bowl game. So yeah, I gave Georgia the best shot, you know, coming back to football because I didn't want to stay at home.
And how long did it take you to get back into football shape? Like, because to come from baseball to football is, you know, you switch sports and yeah. I'm talking about high level. So how long did it take you to get back to quarterback mode from baseball?
You know something? The transition wasn't that bad at all. And the reason why I say that, because I know baseball is not that grueling sport, but it's that everyday grind that keeps you in shape. So it's a little different as far as the contact wise, though. But that everyday grind in baseball, man, let me tell you, man, don't underestimate it. So it didn't take long, to be honest with you. You know, it just to be honest with you, I was just looking for that first hit, you know, that I had been missing in a couple of years, man. And once I got that first contact, man, shit, it was like, you know, riding a bicycle, man. I don't mean to make it sound easy, but, you know, the baseball grind actually helped me get prepared for football, to be honest with you, just because we was doing it every day, man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We had a former NFL player on here last week, Caron Riley, and he said the hardest thing to do in sports was hit a curveball. Is that true?
Oh, man, it is, man. And it is. And the further you go up, you know, in the minor leagues, man, you know, these pitchers are throwing curveballs for strikes. You know, shoot, when I was coming up in high school and, you know, maybe my first year in rookie ball, you know, all these pitchers, man, they weren't throwing curveballs for strikes. But, you know, as the pitching got a little bit better and I started coming up a little bit, you know, moving through the minor leagues a little bit, you know, pitchers were throwing that ball for a strike, you know. Now that's the one that you just can't lay off no more, man. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it takes a lot of hard work, man, to make sure you can time that ball out, though. But, hey, it's right up there, though.
Yeah. So, for you, was it harder to be the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys or to play baseball?
Wow, that's a good question, man. I would have to say baseball, to be honest with you. Yeah, I would have to say baseball because it was an incomplete mission for me. I didn't get to where I wanted to be. So, you know, I didn't really get to where I wanted to be playing with the Cowboys either, though. You know, I was making strides until I cut my career short off some mistakes off the field. But yeah, man, I would have to go ahead and say baseball since it was an incomplete mission for me.
Mm-hmm. And one more baseball question. I saw where they said that you were supposed to go back to play baseball again, but you didn't go to training camp. Why you decided not to go back to the Cubs?
Well, actually, it was after my freshman year. Yeah, it was after my freshman year, and I went for 3 games. And I just didn't have that passion for it anymore. And not only that, man, I wanted to be around my teammates. We had just came off a decent season, winning the Peach Bowl. And I wanted to build on that, man, and, you know, get back to working out with my teammates. So I decided, man, to get my butt back on campus, man, and get in summer school, man, and start working out.
That made sense. That does make sense. And about the Cowboys, man, how was that for you there in Dallas? What was your experience like there?
Man, it was a dream come true. You know, at times, you know, I wish I would have appreciated a little bit more and not made the mistakes that I made off the field, getting myself caught up in the drug program of the NFL. But it was a dream come true. I wish I could have appreciated it a little bit more. But looking in hindsight, man, you know, I was blessed. And man, I enjoyed it. Put it like that. I enjoyed it.
That's dope, man. That's dope. Y'all got anything y'all want to know?
Nah, man. I just remember, you know, watching you growing up, man, and to see, you know, a black quarterback out there starting, especially for a franchise like the Dallas Cowboys, was always awesome to watch and inspirational, because it just wasn't something that you really got a chance to see. And being one of the, you know, I guess first mobile quarterbacks too to go out there and do that, man. You know, that was again a kind of ahead of his time as well. So yeah, it was a pleasure, you know, watching you play back then, especially being a youngin' myself.
Yep. Oh, I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, you had the whole black community on your back then. The whole nation was watching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but hey, man. Yep.
You was carrying that torch.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, man, I would say up until my third year, man, I really didn't feel it. I really didn't feel it. But my third year, when we really started winning and we were heading to the playoffs, that's when I knew what I kind of meant. You know, my first 2 years, man, my first year was a blur, to be honest with you. And then my second year, I ended up getting benched after about 7, 8, 9 games. So that was a different little experience for me. But my third year, winning some football games, going city to city, and seeing who was supporting me, seeing who was ducking their head out, you know. I started to feel that.
Yeah, and I put it up here, man. It says that, yeah, you were like the first rookie quarterback selected in the second round to start a week one game in NFL history, and only the third rookie quarterback to open the season as a starter in club history. Like, that's, man. For those of you young guys out there watching, mm-hmm. you guys don't understand, like, the impact that would have, especially me. I grew up in Mississippi. So, okay. I understand. I look at things and understand things a lot different than the people that grew up elsewhere mm-hmm. and experience, racism in many different forms. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to see that meant a lot, you know, for me growing up, to have, you know, that inspiration to look at that, man. That, and like Shelton said, you know, like, people were definitely rooting for you and talking about you. Like, you were part of, like, weekly and daily conversations. So yeah, to make history, man. So, yeah, that's dope.
Yeah, at a time when, like I said, it was at a time when I didn't see it happening. I was like, man, you know, I remember when you got drafted even being like, they did it? You know, mm-hmm. knowing that they should have done it, but the fact that it was that they did draft you was just crazy to me. And I was like, man, I was like just jumping up and down. I was glad to see you out there. Yeah. Just put it that way.
I never looked at it like that, because I mean, it's not that I didn't look at it like that, or it never became bigger than what we're actually talking about, me being, you know, one of the first blacks, you know, ever to play in Dallas and start the season, I mean, week one or whatever, because I dealt with it at Georgia. You know what I mean? And dealing with it in that atmosphere, you know, I want to say this the right way. There's nobody out there. In Georgia, quote unquote, and you know how racial tensions can be in Georgia. So dealing with it at Georgia, it just, like, God, like, ordered my steps and prepared me for that in Dallas, man. So I guess I never really looked at it like that. But I did start to feel it in my third year, though. Because some of the bigger names start coming out. Your Denzel Washington's and, you know, some other people, Michael Jordan, I met. So then those names, you know, started popping up, you know, in my life. And they were able to give me some of those talks. And then it came a little bit bigger than, you know what I mean? So, but, you know, God ordered my steps in Georgia, man. So I guess I never, you know, felt that pressure like that when I first got.
I mean, and you were living it, so that's, you know, that's understandable, you know, yeah, as well. So I get that. We actually are in Atlanta, Georgia. I don't know if you know that. So we understand, and I followed Georgia football for a while. Definitely a lot more since I've been here. But being in Mississippi, you know, we have we kind of are very regional in some of the sports that we follow. as well. Let me ask you this, man. Because I think you played under Bill Parcells your third year?
Yeah, my third year.
Man, what was he like, man? Because I was a fan of him as a coach, you know, back in the day.
Man, he was a student of the game. It wasn't going to be any situation that you weren't going to be prepared for. He's the ultimate competitor. But I tell you what, I wanted to get better every day I walked in there, and that's just because of the way he went about his business and the way he relayed his message to you. I mean, you just wanted to be better, man, every time you walked in that facility, man. And he was a player's coach, man. You can go and talk to him about everything, man. You know, he's bull-headed, you know, but at the same time, man, you can go have a conversation with him, man, and he's personable. So, man, it was a joy, man. It was a joy to really see me grow as a player and as a man off the field, too, man. So so it was a pleasure, man, playing with him, to be honest with you.
That's dope.
Hey, Quincy, which sports you think you felt you was good in or better in, baseball or football?
Baseball, actually.
Okay.
I still thought I was better in baseball, but I didn't have the patience for baseball.
Same, you know? Yeah, because I played basketball and baseball growing up in Detroit. So that was my two sports, was baseball and basketball. And, yeah, the same reason for you is, like, that's, I think I kind of steered away from baseball, even though my dad used to always tell me, like, I think you should stick with baseball. You're a better baseball player than basketball player. But I always wanted to stay with basketball because, you know, more girls at the games. I'm starting this and everything. So that's why I just figured, as I just figured, like, which sport you felt like you was better in.
Hey, I got another question. If I don't know if you wanted to answer reply to that, but you had a number of comeback wins and big victories, man. What is it like driving down the field with the game on the line? And, you know, you got all your teammates in you and, you know, like being in that moment, what is that like?
Man, it's the icing on the cake. You know, that's what you live for. You want your teammates to know that you can be in those situations right there. And you can pull the team through, man, and make some plays and get your team in the win column, man. So it's the ultimate, as a quarterback, man, it's the ultimate, like, situation you want to be in, you know, so you can prove to your team that, hey, when times get rough and, hey, we need to make a play and win a game, I can be that guy, man. So that's just the ultimate situation for a quarterback.
Like, when you look around, like, you're in the huddle and, like, and they're looking at you, and you have to kind of motivate and pump them up. Like, is it a sense of confidence? Is there nervousness? Do you look across in some of your guys' eyes and see, like, the moment may be too big for them, and you have to kind of, you know, get them to relax? Like what are, like, some of those situations like?
Well, you learn your teammates. That's what training camps is for, man. So you learn your teammates. You know who you can yell at. You know who needs a little pep in their step sometimes. You know who you can count on in tough situations. You know who's going to be that guy who you might need to just, you know, not be so forceful with them. You know, if you drop a ball or whatever, it might get just a pat on the butt instead of, you know, yelling at them. So you learn those situations, man. But, you know, the biggest thing, man, is that, you know, coming up, I dreamt of those situations, man. Mm-hmm. You know, you play these things out in your head, you know, when you're at home and you're preparing, you know, for the game. You play that two-minute situation out. So when the time comes and you get in that huddle, man, you didn't already play this game out in your head, man. So, you know, I thought that I really had great coaches coming up with Buck Godfrey and Steve Davenport to start from in high school. So I had a big advantage when I got to college, man, and getting in those situations. I mean, playing under Jim Donnan and then having the ability to play up under Bill Parcells, man. But I played them situations out in my head. So when it was go time, man, it was, you know, it was that time to make a play. And it was that situation, man, you know. It, to me, and I don't mean to sound cocky, man, but I played it out. were when it got to be game time and it got to be that situation, man, I just followed through with it, you know. And then you learn from those situations too. You know, you learn if you've been through it before, you learn, hey, you know, maybe I need to be a little bit more calmer. Maybe this guy needs to know, you know, we're getting ready to line up to check over to see if he's even on the line of scrimmage. So you learn through them. Every situation is different when it comes. And you just play the situation out when it comes, man. But you prepare mentally for it before it gets there.
Gotcha. So, okay. Yeah, I mean, you know, as you know, people that watch the sport and as a show that kind of, you know, analyze and are, you know, I guess critics, you know, at some moments, it's easy for us to say that, you know, as people sitting around watching it, but it's always different when you're playing it and, you know, you're in those moments. So it's always good to kind of hear like the people that's actually done its perspective, you know, cause that, you know, for me, I know to help me thinking about like when a guy doesn't accomplish that moment or fail when they had the opportunity. Like you look at Jimmy G and he had the guy, Emmanuel Sanders, wide open down the field.
Game winner.
And your game winner, your chance to go in history and you overshot him. So is that adrenaline? It had to be an adrenaline because he can. And so, you know, it's those things that I wonder about. So that's why I was asking that question.
That's why he'll be better in that situation when it comes, man. And, you know, it happens. He probably prepared himself as well as anybody, especially when it comes to the Super Bowl. But hey, mm-hmm. We get some, and I bet you next time, man, he'll hit that.
Yep.
Speaking on, well, you talked about the Super Bowl that just happened this past year. The guy who won it all, I don't know if you've been paying attention to the news that's been going on today, but Patrick Mahomes just signed basically a $500 million contract for a decade with the Chiefs. I wanted to get your thoughts on just that contract alone and also just where we are with black quarterbacks as far as them being the faces of the NFL.
Yeah, and that's where we are. I'll start with that, man. We're starting to get a little bit more and more opportunities, you know. And, man, that's one hell of a contract, to be honest with you. I wonder what the upfront money is, though, because, you know, we've seen these 10-year contracts before with Donovan McNabb and Michael Vick. But the contract was really backloaded. So I'm interested to see how much guaranteed money is in that. But, man, that's one, you know, that's one hell of a statement to make, you know, for somebody, like you just said, man, to think about that like that, too. Almost a $500 million, man. That's, you know, that's pretty remarkable, man. But we'll see how much upfront money it is. But, yeah, man, this is the time, you know, for the black quarterback. We don't have to prove to ourselves as passers anymore. And I think that's a testament to the development of 7-on-7 and us being able to throw the ball from 7 years old all the way through high school and on to college too. So I think that's really developing us as passers, and we don't have to prove ourselves that we can pass and not use our legs too. Now it's all about a healthy balance. Because one thing I know, you know, that that read option in the NFL, you know, is just not – I mean, you can get some usage out of it, you know, from the quarterback position. But, you know, when you really think about who's really ran that read option and has success with it, we're talking about some short career guys, Cam Newton being one of them. But now look how banged up he is as the result. And, you know, he's only really – and I say only – but he's really only played 8 years, man. And who can really run around like Cam Newton? Who can really run around like Lamar Jackson? You know, I like the way we're heading, but I'm not all that happy about the development of the quarterback in college football, because that read option really not is really not conducive to anybody having long-term success like that in the NFL, man. So, but I like where we are, though. We get a lot of more opportunities, though, but I would like for that, you know, that read option, man, to not play so big of a part in someone's development, because when they get to the NFL, they find out real quick, we just ain't going to be running around that field like that. So, but I like where we're at, though, right now.
Is there any black QB that is playing today that sticks out for you? I mean, of course, you see Patty Mahomes. I don't know if he's one of the guys that you probably can gravitate towards, but is there anyone else that you really like the way they play the game?
Man, my favorite man right now is Dak, of course, man. But I'll be honest with you, I'm just a big Dak fan. I just like the way he handles himself. You know, he's finishing a job, I think, for me that I wasn't able to finish. So it makes me proud that he's able to handle that situation in Dallas, because I know how tough it is to be the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. But man, I'll be honest with you, man. What Russell Wilson is doing right now is so underrated that it's ridiculous, man. And then the fact that he can get up under the center and be in the shotgun, and now you got an array of things that you can do, you know, as an offense, man. So that's still my guy. You know, I know Mahomes is having great success right now. You know, I would like him to protect himself a little bit more, you know, because they're going to be gunning after him now. You know, that target is on him. But his arm talent speaks for itself. But, man, I'm a big Russell Wilson fan, too, though.
Why do you think Russell is so criminally underrated?
Well, he plays in Seattle, you know. They're not the big headline team. And then also his demeanor, you know, the way he goes about his business. He's not your headliner guy, you know. He's going to say what he has to say, be direct. You're not going to get a whole bunch of attention out of him. And that's just the way he goes about his business. And then, you know, today's market, you want the brash guy. You want the guy that's going to be making statements and the guy you can always be flashing on the news. And he's just not that guy, man. He just goes about his business differently, man, and just, you know, handles himself the way he handles himself. And not to say the other guy's not, you know, doing the right things by being that guy who's outspoken. But that's just the way Russell goes about his business. And, you know, that don't sell in today's media.
So, hey, you mentioned Dak. What do you think of Dak's situation, and how do you think it's going to turn out?
Man, I don't know. It's going to be interesting, because this year I don't see them winning over 10 games. I got them probably at 9-7, 8-8. And now you blame it on Dak again to say he's gonna have he had a mediocre year. I mean, he threw for 4,900 yards last year, and they call it a mediocre year, which is ridiculous. But so now are we looking at that mediocre year again just because your record is 9-7 and 8-8? Now do you franchise him again? Now if you franchise him now you franchise him 40. Okay, now Dak has a chip on his shoulders. Now he wants 37, 38 mil now, because you didn't make him wait another year. So I think they're in a bad situation, man. We'll see how it plays out. But yeah, I don't like where they're at right now. I heard a rumor on Facebook that he's supposed to be around the 35 mark again. And he's supposed to be signing. But are you kidding me? If that was the case, shoot, they would have did that about a month or two ago. Right?
Yeah.
Why do you think You play for Jerry Jones as a black QB. Why do you think – you've seen how he treated Tony Romo. You see how he treats Dak. And Dak has won more than Tony – I've watched enough Tony Romo to see that Dak has done more with the Cowboys than he's ever done. What – with your time with Jerry Jones, is it more to it than what we see superficial, as far as, like, Jerry just doesn't like the guy as much as everybody else does?
No, he does like him, you know, but every case is a little bit different. But I'll be honest with you, man. I mean, the owners are slow to give black quarterbacks that money, you know. And in his situation, you know, he's following a bad guy, too, by following Tony Romo, who they just, you know, I wouldn't say wasted $165, $170 million on him, but you gave him all that money for two playoff wins. So now you got a guy coming in with only one playoff win. Now the market is at a way different scale now. And now you're sitting there asking yourself, should we waste all this money again on a quarterback? And then, you know, besides your Donovan McNabbs, your Diggs, which those contracts actually weren't all that great when you really looked at the structure of them. But I'll be honest with you, owners are just a little slow to give black quarterbacks that, you know, that big dollar. And then to be honest with you, there's not a whole lot of body of work to say, okay, we gave a black quarterback this money and didn't really work out for the benefit of our team. You know what I mean? So you got your Russell Wilson. You can throw Donovan in there, but he didn't get a Super Bowl. Vic didn't get a Super Bowl. So that's how they're looking at it. But we know our opportunities haven't been the greatest either and haven't been fair all the time. But, you know, that's the way they're looking at it. And, you know, you don't want to make excuses. You keep working your butt off just like any job. And, man, you put your hard hat on, man, and keep going back to work.
But I think
what what'd you think about Cam Newton's contract and what he ended up doing?
It's absolutely ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous for Jameis Winston to make $1 million this year and he threw for 5,000 yards. That is, I don't care how many interceptions he threw. We know good and well if that was, I can't even think of nobody
right. Carson Wentz.
It's hard to compare 30 interceptions, and that's everybody's tipping point. But 5,000 yards, we had like 5,000 yards just going out and playing in your backyard, right. And anybody can do that. That's ridiculous. And then the fact that Chase Daniels is making $13 million this year.
That's crazy.
That's crazy.
That's crazy. That's the quarterback I look at all the time about that crazy money. Chase Daniel has gotten more love than any quarterback in the league as far as I'm concerned. He's been overpaid his whole career.
Exactly, man. So, yeah, it's ridiculous, man. But, hey, like I say, man, you know, you can complain and get out or you put your hard hat on, man, and keep getting get back to work, man. And that's where we are. So, you know, hey, we got to keep working. And we keep working for the next guy, man. You know what I mean? That's just the way it is, man.
Yeah, and I think one of the things, seeing this Patrick Mahomes thing, like, we heard, like, word that they were working on a deal that he was going to get paid. Mm-hmm. They were going to break the bank, reset the market. And you saw how they just got the deal done. Not a lot of talk.
Nope.
Couple of things here and there. They just got the deal done. Wasn't a lot of talk on sports shows and et cetera. So my takeaway is that when you want to pay them, you're going to pay them.
You're going to pay them.
Christian McCaffrey got paid. Deal done in solid.
Yeah.
You know, but this whole Dak thing has been played out just –
so long.
You know, in so long and in the media in front of everybody. You got Stephen Jones saying stuff here and there. Other, you know, it's a lot, man. But if they wanted to pay him, they'll pay him. I agree with you. Every situation is different. Right now, we have no insight on what that situation is. Is it an extra year? Is it more money? We don't know. But for it to go this long and for other people to get paid, that's insane to me. Mm-hmm.
And it's even worse when you paid everybody but the quarterback. You paid the linebackers. You paid the defensive tackle, defensive ends, the running back. When we were talking about a couple years ago, the running back position is dead as far as like getting that big contract. So, and like you said, Dak has been probably one of the most stand up QBs for a franchise for the last 5 to 10 years. As far as what he's had to deal with,
said he wouldn't kneel.
He took over for Tony Romo when everybody still loved him. And then he won. He went, you know, his rookie year, he won his rookie of the year, and he went toe-to-toe with Aaron Rodgers. So it's just like, if we have to be a Patrick Mahomes where we have to win an MVP our second year, we have to win a Super Bowl and be the Super Bowl MVP in our third year just to get – I mean, yeah, he's getting $500 million now, but like you said, we don't know what the guarantees are. The mechanics of it, the information is still coming out, but to be that Hall of Fame ready early on in your career on a rookie deal.
Well, let me ask y'all this: is $140 million guarantee good for 10 years?
I don't think that's the final. I can't believe if you're offering a guy $500 million, 140 can't be the only number that's guaranteed out of the rest of that. I know it's a 10-year contract. But I was expecting at least.
They didn't say no signing bonus, so I don't know.
Yeah, they didn't say it. They haven't break. I'm sure the breakdown will come out. But for me, $200 million has to be guaranteed at least.
For 10 years is a long ass time. This is a baseball move by the Kansas
City Chiefs. It's the biggest contract in sports history, at least North American sports. I know that.
Mm.
So it is baseball numbers, but the guy. I mean, he is a baseball player.
But why would he decide to lock himself in over 10 years? And stay with their franchise over 10 years.
Well, because they believed in him. They traded up for him.
Not about them believing in him, about him believing in them.
That's what I'm saying. They put the faith in him when they had Alex Smith and they was winning games, they still traded up to
get
him.
Bro, we talking about 10 years, man.
I understand
that. Is Andy Reid going to be there for that long? Because, you know, it seemed like him and Andy Reid got a good rapport. So maybe the Chiefs were like, look, you stay here for 10 years. You're going to have Andy Reid for this whole 10 years. Some QBs
Andy
might
leaving
want that.
At some point.
You say you think Andy leaving
Andy,
at some point?
Andy just got a Super Bowl, so he ain't leaving yet.
That's what I'm saying.
And then you can
they
also
might get another one.
And what I think they're saying is that they just want him to be a career Kansas City Chief. They want him there forever. So that's what it seems like to me with the 10-year
deal. I mean,
that's good
that the team want to show commitment because, I mean, I know a lot of QBs and players in general, especially in football, that's what they want. They want that commitment from the organization. So at least he's getting that.
That's a good point.
At least he's getting that.
Well, I was thinking, too, like, Eric Bieniemy is still on the team. So Andy might not be there for the full 10, but Eric is going to probably be there for the last 5.
That might
five.
Be a part of the deal. Like, you know, QBs feel comfortable with certain coaches that they play with, whether it's the head coach, maybe the offensive coach. Like, look, okay, if he leaves, make sure this is my guy when he leaves.
So, exactly.
But, I mean, you know that over – I mean, it's a smart business decision. So taking it from the Chiefs' perspective. Mm-hmm. So you know over the next 10 years what that dollar amount for that quarterback is. Every single year going into it, and you know what type of receivers that he needs in order to succeed and move forward, speedy guys, whatever, whatever. So now it's just a matter of drafting and signing guys that fit that mold.
Yeah, I think. I mean, we all knew he was going to get the blockbuster deal, so that's not surprising. Even though it's still a lot of money we're talking about, but at the same time, a decade though, like that, I get what you're saying, like. I can understand why he's probably gung-ho because he's looking at them dollar signs, but I just hope that they treat him right and they get that offensive line, like just like how Peyton Manning was in his career with the Colts. Like, you got to have a fortress surrounding this guy because he is literally your future for the next till he's like 30 plus.
Mm-hmm.
You think they're gonna reconstruct it at some point, like in a few years? Or
I think by his seventh year they'll restructure it. Like, it depends on how good he – if he can win two more titles within the next 5 years, which is reasonable, I would say, they
– You might as well say that's a dynasty if you win two more titles within 5 years.
I think – I mean, it's not far off. That offense is
– That's three titles in 6 years. That's pretty damn good.
Because I was arguing with my homeboy, like, could he get six?
Six rings?
He could possibly get six.
I mean
– I wouldn't be surprised.
I think so.
I mean, man, that's crazy. I mean,
because I mean, he's in the AFC West.
It's the NFL, though. It's not NBA.
No, but I mean, I'm just thinking about the same way the Patriots got to their dynasty.
Yeah,
that division helped a lot. We always talk about it. Like, if you look at the NFC West, I mean, the AFC West, the Raiders ain't gonna be doing shit for a little bit. The Chargers lost their franchise QB, Broncos, so we don't know what they're doing.
Broncos.
The Broncos are still developing Drew Lock, like. He's by far the best quarterback, not only in the NFL.
So he's about to get the Tom Brady treatment. Where
he's
going to
get that Tom Brady. The only person he got to face is Lamar.
Yeah.
He got one guy.
That's not in the division, though. I mean, that's not in his.
That's not even in the division.
Exactly. I mean, in the conference, but not in the division.
But I was just saying, like, his division is a wash.
Yeah. So.
And all he got to do is face Lamar.
We'll see. But you know how funny football is. Yeah, football. We never know. In another 2 years, we might see an SC team and be like, damn, we didn't think this from them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it's always a surprise.
Exactly.
So,
Cincinnati is going to be that team. You know, Joe Burrow going to come. Hey, look, Joe, we see you.
That's what I'm saying. You never know, man. The Bills might make like a run where you'd be like, damn, you know, because of that defense.
That defense is mean.
You never know.
Yeah. Did we lose Quincy?
Yeah, it looked like we did. I don't know what happened. No, he should jump back on him.
Since we in the NFL, we can get his thoughts when he come back on. But what was y'all thoughts on Washington?
We'll be back after this quick break.
Hey, it's me, Colin Moriarty, proprietor of the podcast network Colin's Last Stand, co-host of the mega-popular PlayStation podcast Sacred Symbols, and also co-host of another show that I think you may enjoy, a retro and nostalgia-themed romp called Knockback. I co-host the show with my brother, Emmy Award-winning Sesame Workshop lead animator and character designer Dagan Moriarty. And we post a new episode each and every week, celebrating all that mattered most to us growing up, from the 70s, 80s, 90s, and beyond. On one episode, we'll talk about an old video game, and on another, a classic movie. And another yet, stories from our past, delving into all things old school.
If you want to tickle those nostalgic muscles within you, remember the glory days of years gone, and have a lot of laughs while doing it, join us for Knockback with new episodes posted each and every Thursday on your favorite podcast service.
They changing their team name as far as the NFL team.
They just say they're changing it to what?
They haven't said to what.
Okay.
I think they got it.
But they're getting ready for it.
They're getting ready to
start this season or starting.
I don't think
it's going to be this. Huh?
Did they say they were going to change it?
They're changing it.
I don't think it's going to be as quick as this.
I was just trying to find out to what and when. When is it going to be the actual? I'm assuming 2021 fall season. I don't think they're going to do it this year. Maybe I think this year might be the last year of the
That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, it's going to be
But didn't Nike, I want to say, didn't Nike and FedEx took off? Yeah. So.
And now it's three minority owners of the Washington team are seeking to sell their shares. Because they're not
happy. What kind of minority? Black?
They just say minority. They just say they're not happy being a partner with owner Dan Snyder.
Anymore. They were good until.
Businessman Robert. Rothman, Dwight Scar, and Frederick W. Smith. Combined, they owned about 40% of the team.
It could be white.
They most likely probably are.
It could be white. Minority order McKinney, they got a small
percent. Oh, I was thinking. You know what I'm saying? Color.
You're thinking of, they could be
white. Yeah, no, I was just saying, like, the owners of the team are now pulling out.
That's what I'm saying. They could
which
be
is
white.
Like, that says a lot. Money
either,
is being.
Either they're not happy or they think they're going to, that the name change is going to devalue the franchise and not going to be worth as much as it was.
I haven't seen it. I didn't know that they had agreed to the name change. I thought they were under review for name change. But
that's just talk.
Yeah,
But the facts are, Shelton, is you're absolutely right. They haven't officially came out and stated that they are. They only put out the letter saying that they're going to review it. So that's them. In all honesty, like you, until they actually say it. I think this is them trying to stretch it out as long as they can to wait for the climate to change and for things to get back to normal. Yeah. But I think it's a wrap now. You can't go back. It's too many people on your ass.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ron Rivera came out and told the Post that
he do coach them now.
Yeah.
Damn, I forgot about
he
that.
Yeah.
He said they're working on a nickname in the next over the next week. Yeah.
They got a so they have a minority coach and a minority quarterback. So, and a minority
who
name.
Quarterback? Who the Redskins quarterback? Haskins.
Haskins.
Oh, yeah. From Ohio State, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Damn. I've been so disconnected from football. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, Quincy said he lost signal, so I'm trying to see if he's getting back on in a second.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, I saw his video went out, so that's normally a sign when your video started to go down. When I was watching Hamilton last night, you know, we had the captions up, and them motherfuckers stopped showing. I'm like, God damn, they just didn't feel like doing the captions for the rest of the movie. That shit stopped. I think, man, like, this is interesting, right? Because this has been a conversation that's been going on for the last couple of years with the name.
Yeah,
I was going to say longer than that.
But it's
not as big news.
But
yeah.
The last two or three years, it's really, like Ken about to say, it really picked up steam.
And it's not just them. It's like all the teams, like the Cleveland Indians, there was another team as well that was getting criticized. But yeah, they've all been like, they've had to change.
Yeah. And, but up until this point, they've been pretty much invulnerable to all that. It's like, ah, okay, whatever. It's a small number of you people that are upset about this. We're going to stick to our guns here. And then Floyd happened, Ahmaud happens. And then, this is what I'm saying. Everybody's mad.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's mad. And the structure of this country is under review by everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And all that shit, they're going to start stripping all that shit down and packing it up and putting it in a museum. This is just a start. And it shows that. It really shows the power of money and why you need, unfortunately, these companies to back you. Because if FedEx and UPS, whoever else, Nike, if they ain't say what they said, they wouldn't give a damn.
Mm-hmm.
They give a damn because it's FedEx and Nike. And said,
big brands.
Yeah.
Big brands.
Yeah, so.
And Nike can't, like, you can't come out with a poster of Cap and then still be representing the Washington team.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it, like you said, the economic power. You realize the economic power in this country
is it being woke?
Is yeah? it's whatever's
woke,
trending right
woke
now.
Wokenomics.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. Yeah,
so ultimately, you do think they're gonna change the name, or you think they're just gonna let it go?
I think they'll just take the red off the name and just call it the Skins.
The Coon Skins?
I think they're gonna call it the Washington Skins.
Washington Skins.
Because people can't say that as the nickname anyway. Like
that, nah, they're gonna have to change the whole thing, man. It's gonna be too close.
You could say Pigskin.
I don't
know.
Then the cops will be mad.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm back in, fellas. My bad.
That's all right.
Y'all good, man. Technology, it happens.
Yeah, we was just talking about Washington changed their franchise name or being pushed to change.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's going to be interesting, man. Yeah. I think, man, you know, Colin Cowherd, I don't even know how to pronounce it the right way, but he said it best, man. If it offends anybody, you know, then why not change the name? Because if it was switched on the other side of the fence, man, we know it would be changed, man. Man, that was big for him to say that too, though, man. Yeah, I like him, man. He's kind of fair.
What you think about Dwayne Haskins?
Wow. Man, that's a good question, man. But he's one of those tweeners, you know, in that spread offense. And so will he develop, you know, as a passer, and can they, you know, do some things conducive to his skill set without always having, you know, that threat of the read option type concepts? Because he's no threat with his legs. So, but he's been in that offense for so long. Does he make those adjustments? And that's what I was alluding to earlier, man. Does he make those adjustments, you know, that's going to get him, have him as a bona fide starter for years? We'll see, though. But I like, you know, he's got the talent. He's got the arm. But, you know, it's just more than just the talent and the arm, man. So is he able to make those adjustments? And is it going to be sustainable, man, for years? We'll see.
Do you think he should have stayed in college a little bit longer?
You know, that's hard to say, man, to be honest with you. You know, you got guys telling you you're going to be in the top 10 picks, man. You know, it's kind of tough for you to, you know, stay around in school, man, and risk injury, though. So, you know, it's all circumstantial, man, and everybody's situation is different, though. But, you know, within that offense, I mean, what more are you going to develop as a quarterback playing in that particular offense that you know you're not going to be able to run into the NFL? So when are you ready? You know what I mean?
Because
you ain't taking to the NFL. So when are you ready? So it's all circumstances.
Bet.
What else?
Sticking with football, I don't know if you heard about this either. Colin Kaepernick, he's been getting a lot of deals. He's the only one that's been making money during this whole pandemic. Disney just announced another partnership deal with him to do a exclusive docuseries produced by ESPN Films. And it's basically going to be like a bunch. It's not just one thing. It sounds like it's going to be like scripted and unscripted stories that explore race, social injustice, and the quest for equity. And it's also going to be behind the scenes, going to have a lot of minority directors and producers. I think he's got another 6-part documentary series coming out with Netflix. What do you think about the plight of Colin Kaepernick from where he started with kneeling to where he is now?
Honestly, I'm happy for him because he's getting money that he lost when they basically took his NFL career from him. So, man, I think he, you know, something people ask me all the time, could I have been Kaepernick? And, man, honestly, I don't think I could have did what he done. I'll just be honest with you, man. You know, I know he did go into it knowing that, you know, he had, you know, pretty much I guess, probably guaranteed about $10, $15, $20 million in his pocket. You know, I only grossed $2 million out the NFL. I wasn't on my second contract, so I don't know if I could have been brave enough to do what he did. So, man, he deserves everything he's getting. So, man, I'm happy for him, man, to be honest with you.
I told you, man, it's wokenomics. And, you know, like you said, he's the only one that's making money out of this thing. And it's really interesting. I think from what I've heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, this doesn't really talk about that. It talks about his high school career.
That's the thing. He's got a lot going on. Like, he's got a lot of deals. So I don't know. This is a new deal that's maybe, I think the Netflix may deal with his upbringing.
Because I don't want to care. I don't care about his damn upbringing.
I mean,
why do we need to see that?
We ain't got nothing else to watch, Ken. What else are you watching, man? Ain't shit else to watch. But I would want to see, because his history of to where he was to where he is now is kind of like, to some people, I would say, is like, where did this come from? Like, not to say it's unwarranted, but his upbringing to how he thinks and how he acts is like, I would like to hear that origin story.
Because he's mixed, right? Or is he adopted?
He's adopted.
Okay.
I think he may still be mixed, but I know he was adopted.
He's definitely mixed.
And I would just like to see, like, how did he just get a new mindset as he got older, or?
So he woke up black one day and white the other?
Hey, sometimes it hits you like that. You know?
It just picking the day.
Yeah, like, so I would like to see that origin story. And then I would just also like to see what opportunities he creates for others. Because one of my biggest criticisms of him when he was going through it was how he was criticizing other black folk while he was trying to do his thing. So I would like to see how he uplifts the community now that he has a platform, not only for himself, but for others.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay. So, but until then, we're going to be watching pictures.
Yeah. Until then, we're going to be watching more of his. We're
going to watch Colin.
We're going to see his combine. His at home combine. You play baseball, Quincy. So, how do you feel about the MLB coming back for this 60-game shortened season? Do you think that's interesting for baseball now that we because they're actually coming back for basketball. Are you more excited for this season to see how this will play out with this experimentation with the schedule? Or do you think, like how B is with basketball, that we should just cancel this whole year for sports and just try to focus on staying healthy?
Yeah, man, when it comes to basketball, I feel like basketball is kind of, you know, they're reaching right now. I don't understand that when they're going to be back at it, you know, in September. So I'm dumbfounded on basketball trying to really get their season in. But baseball, they've got a shot. But, you know, all these different protocols that I've been reading about and seeing, we'll see how it works out, man. But don't really, you know, favors them that they keep coming up with all these positive tests, man. So we'll see. It's a trying time for all of us right now. Everything is new. So, man, we'll see. But, man, I'm so confused about it all. You know, it's just really, man, it's just a wait-and-see situation, to be honest with you.
Are you excited to have anything back, or are you willing to wait?
Man, I'm waiting on football. You know, I'm a baseball guy. I watch some big games on maybe Saturday. You know, your Cubs and Cardinals, Red Sox and Yankees. You know, I see some of those tough series throughout the year. But you know, to be honest with you, man, I'm a playoff guy. You know, I like the playoffs. So we'll see if they can even get to the playoffs, or even better yet, even get started during this time. I want them to sit down so we can have a football season, to be honest with you. So we'll see how it works out, man.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting just to see, because, you know, with baseball, it's really a lot of white people, right? You know, that's playing the sport. A couple of Latinx.
I'm about to say, yeah, you got the Latinx.
You know, but, you know, I mean, depending on, you know, where they grew up, they probably think they white too. But the thing is that you have a lot of, like, guys starting to sit out and be like, nah, I'm not playing. We're talking about names. Trout is on the fence about whether or not he wants to play. So what happens when those guys sit out? I think to their benefit, baseball don't have like this really big, huge, like superstar. Like
they don't promote their stars like NBA right. do.
Outside of Aaron Judge, he could potentially be that guy. But outside of that, you know, they just want you to go out there, swing the stick, and see if you can hit the ball, and that's fine with them. So, but I think the idea of doing a 60-game season is interesting, and I hope they extend that to next season and not try to go back to where they were. But going back to football, Quincy, since you mentioned it, they're talking about doing away with the preseason. And there's some conversations saying that they should just push the season all the way back to January when they potentially get you know, a vaccine and some way to treat it. And remember, a couple of weeks ago, that was one of the things that I mentioned, and you agreed with me about this is going to be interesting to see how this play out and how they deal with the situation because they're going to be in the thick of it when it comes to this COVID
flu
stuff.
Season, everything on top of everything. So,
but that's why I would say, like, I can't imagine a year without sports. Like,
look,
imagine being in the house. And you can imagine being sitting here right now wearing a damn mask.
Right.
That's true, too.
Doing it.
But at least, but that's true, too. But like, I'm just thinking about not only just the economic value, but the jobs lost as well.
I agree.
Like,
it's devastating.
It's affecting the world in a way that I've never seen it happen before. So I would think they're going to try their damnedest of ways.
Bro, if they cancel football,
that's the heart. Man. I mean, baseball is supposed to be America's pastime, but football is where it's at.
I
don't see how you can play college football. I just don't see how.
Well, they already said.
That's out the question. Yeah, college football is out the question.
Yeah, they like, nah, we good. Because
you're dealing with – that's a student-athlete sport. Even though they don't really talk about students. But that's a student-athlete sport. Parents ain't going to let their kids go and back to school, let alone play football, to get COVID and bring it back home. Nah, that's not going.
And you can't play in a – you can't be in a bubble. So I don't – it's just not possible.
But college is talking about not playing anyway. And I forgot who said this, but they said watch the Ivy schools. And when they start canceling stuff, that's a sign. Because remember, in basketball, they were one of the first ones to cancel. I think on this program, we made note of that. Like, they must know some shit that we don't know if they canceling their stuff. You know, all them motherfuckers in there looking at the sales.
Quincy, do you think that football could possibly be pushed back? Is that a more likely realistic situation or that the – because I don't think they've even delayed their season at all. Do you think that it will still start up the same timeline?
Man, we'll see, to be honest with you, man. Man, everything is so up in the air right now. And, you know, you got to protect these guys. And I'm sure they're thinking about their families too, man. So. Man, honestly, man, this is one situation, man, that I really, you know, over the last, especially over the last couple of weeks with things slowing down, I know for me and my, you know, the kids that I train, man, it's, you know, it's one of those situations, man, I don't know. I really don't, man. It's going to be interesting, man. We'll see how it plays out, you know. I know those protests and everything didn't help the situation, so. No, that didn't help at all, man. So, but I think that had to be done, you know, so our voice can be finally heard the way it needed to be heard. But it set us back a little bit. And, man, we'll just see, you know, is football even that, you know, important is the question now. Is it that important to risk, you know, all these players' lives and their families. So that's where we're at right now, man. So we'll see. I don't have an answer, to be honest with you, man. I really don't.
We'll find out, man. When they start canceling games, that's always a first step in the side for me. Mm-hmm. But we got about 15 minutes left. So what else? You got anything else?
That's pretty much all.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Hey, you know. Yeah, go ahead, Shelton.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No. Well, yeah. You mentioned the students, the kids that you train, man. What's that like? Working with the youth, man. What's that experience like?
Man, it's a dream come true. To be honest with you, I've always wanted to be a coach. You know, I kind of forced myself into coaching a little bit earlier than I would have wanted to, simply because of the mistakes I made in my life, man. But you know, it's gratifying, man, to be able to coach somebody, man, and actually see the results of what you're teaching them, man. That's the most rewarding thing about coaching. And then, you know, implementing something in some in a kid's life that's going to be beneficial, man, to their future, man. So it's a real humbling experience, man. You know, you learn daily just off different situations as a coach. And, man, it's great to be an influence in someone's life, man, in a positive way.
What's the name of your training facility, your training company?
It's QC Quarterback School.
Mm. Okay. And it's in Texas?
Well, it's everywhere, nationwide, man. I just did a camp in Orlando a couple weeks ago. I joined a partnership with this other guy, Tom George, who does camps across the country. I'll be at home on Thursday. Friday I have a camp in Decatur, man. We can't even actually announce the location just because of the COVID situation around DeKalb County and the fields being closed. But we're able to secretly do some things. I can't really say what we're actually doing. But then I have one there. Then I also have one in Albany on the 12th, which at Westover High School, which actually my guy, I couldn't get back with him today because I was out, you know, with my quarterbacks on the field. But shoot, we'll probably talk in the morning to see if that one's still on the 12th. So, man, shoot, I'm just trying to, you know, have my own camps, but then join up with guys, man, and, you know, and have camps too, man, and influence these kids, get these kids in college, man, and see, you know, man, what influence you can be, man, on some of these kids' lives.
And that's important, man, because, you know, the fact that you have been through some stuff, you've seen the top of the top, and you've been through a lot. You know what I'm saying? Like you said, you know, you had some mistakes and failures in there. Those are the best teachers. That's who I would want my kids to work with, somebody who can tell both sides of the story. Like, I've been ultra successful to this level. Like, to be honest, you can't get any higher than the Dallas Cowboys quarterback. Like, what other position is higher than that? You know what I'm saying? Hmm. So in saying that, to have it all and then to you know, have seen it all, that's who you want to coach your kids. And that's big, man.
Yeah, I appreciate that, man. You know, sometimes you wonder if your message is being drowned out by some of the mistakes you have made. But you're definitely right, man. And I had some coaches that went through some things, and those are the guys that, you know, I kind of gravitated to the guys, man, who, you know, been through the fire, been through some things too. So I appreciate, man, you saying that, man. It means a lot.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So I'm definitely going to have to get my son in one of your camps. I'm not, he's 14 and he needs some work.
Hey, well, shoot, man, we can talk about that. That's not a problem.
Yep. Hey, let me ask you a question, though. What quarterback today closely resembles you? Like, who do you see yourself in out of the quarterbacks in the NFL today? Like, who is it? Well, even in college, even, like I see me in this person. Who is it that closely resembles you in your game that you played?
Wow. I think it's Dak Prescott and Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't probably as quick as Russell Wilson as fast, but you know, the way, you know, he navigates, I'm speaking of Russell, the way he navigates on the field, whether he should run, and when he does, he protects himself getting down and sliding. I know I did a lot of that in my career, so I think those two really, really come to the forefront when I think about it.
Yeah, I can see that, you know, yep, especially with the calm demeanor. And because that, like I said, that's one thing I did notice, because I followed your career, man. That's one thing I noticed. You was always cool for school. Now you was definitely cool under pressure at that too. What was the biggest adjustment coming from college to the pro game?
I would say definitely learning the offense and, you know, the verbiage of your offense, you know, the words got a little bit more. The play actually extended a little bit longer as far as word-wise. And then I would say the way defenses disguised their coverage. They just wasn't going to line up in it. And they, you know, they were more synchronized, especially in the secondary. And a lot of things happened at the snap of the ball, and they just weren't just lining up in it. So I would say those two things there.
And also, who was the corner that you saw on the other side of the ball in the NFL that you say, I'm not throwing to that side. I don't care what y'all talking about. Who was that corner for you?
Wow. Man, this is going to sound so crazy to you, but I played with Champ Bailey, so I got to practice against him in college. And so, you know, I never shied away from him in college. And then, you know, to come to the NFL and throw my first touchdown against Champ Bailey on a deep ball, man, I'll be honest with you, man, it was no corner, especially with the receivers I had. It was no corner that I looked at as a major threat, to be honest with you, man. Because, you know, I played with some pretty good receivers, and Terry Glenn and Joey Galloway and Antonio Bryant.
Yeah.
Jason Witten's first year. So, man, I have no disrespect to the fellas, man, but it wasn't one corner. Now, it was a defense that I didn't like enjoy playing against, and that was, you know, the Eagles when they had Dawkins and Troy Vance.
Oh, yeah, that was a mean squad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, those boys there, but you know, as far as just one corner, no, I didn't fear none of them.
Who was faster, Terry Glenn or Joey Galloway?
Wow. Man.
Rest in peace, Terry Glenn.
Yeah, I know, man. That was my dog, too, yeah. Man. He was so cool, man. I'll have to give it to Joey if we're going to run, if we're talking about a straight 40. But but what all Terry gave you within a route was just special, and how he got quick he was off the ball, man. So, you know, but I might have to give a slight edge to Joey.
All right. And what defensive end, we talked about corner, what defensive end did you have to look out for game in and game out? Who was that defensive end in your time?
I would say Michael Strahan.
Hey.
Because he had the ability to get around the edge, and then he also had the ability to just put an offensive tackle in my lap, too. So, and just, I'm talking about in just straight bull rush him, though. So I'll have to say straight in.
All right. I'm trying to think of what else I got. I had a bunch of questions now, so. Dang, I can't think. What y'all got?
Yeah, shit, you asked all the good ones. I was thinking of, to be honest.
Yeah, Strahan was a monster.
Nah, yeah, Strahan was, I mean, shit.
And that Eagles defense, I remember that defense, man. Mm-hmm. Man.
You played in probably the last really great competitive era of the NFC East as compared to now, where even though it's still competitive, but it's based off of, like, the best of the worst, at least in my opinion, of the last 5 years. But that era of football, do you sometimes reminisce over it? Do you think it's gotten worse as far as that type of competitive level, or has it gotten better because of the talent level? There's more athletes that are all over the side of the ball than it was back then. Like, how do you compare your era from today's era?
Well, the athlete is definitely bigger, faster, and stronger. But, you know, I think 7-on-7 has really affected the game. But, see, the thing about the NFL, people will take this into account, is the hash marks. So you're able to spread offenses out in college, but you're not able to do that in the NFL. So I think we're bringing a college-style game, you know, to the NFL. Especially when it comes to, you know, the rule changes and receivers not being able to, you know, basically get touched after 5 yards. But the problem is you can't spread those guys out the way you can in the NFL. But all the passing that, you know, these quarterbacks are doing, like I said, from age 7 on up, is really helping in the development of passers. So you're starting to get a lot of guys who know how to fit balls in tight windows just because of all the, you know, all the experience they're getting coming up with throwing the ball so much. So it's definitely two different eras. I think the running back is, you know, it's starting to be a – I wouldn't say it's a lost art, but the appreciation of a running back is really starting to decline. So, you know, it's hard to compare to both of them because it's two different games, especially with all the rule changes. But, you know, it makes it interesting, I guess, for the fans. But yeah, man, it's two different games right now.
Which era would you have thrived in? Would you have thrived in that one or this one better?
You know something? I think I was a quarterback that always needed a good running game. So I wasn't going to be your 40 attempt guy, you know, a game and go out and win 10, 11 games, you know, every year. So I think this era I could have played in and had some success in, but I always thought, that having a good running game was probably my best forte and my best friend.
Who was your running back in Dallas?
I'm sorry?
Who was your running back there?
Well, you know, Emmett was my first 2 years, and then I had Troy Hambrick and Richie Anderson and Avion Kayson, my third year. Yeah.
Troy Hambrick, that's the South Carolina Gamecock, ain't it?
Uh-huh. But then I was able to go see Lamont Jordan and Curtis Martin up in New York and do some work.
Oh, my God.
And I'm talking about one hell of a 1-2 punch, man. So,
yeah,
it was fun playing with them for the 3-4 games I was able to start, too.
Really quick, what was it like playing with Emmett, being a rookie?
Man, the first time I seen Emmett and got in the huddle with him, man, I was so starstruck, man. It was ridiculous, man. It took me a little while to get used to that, man. But it was fun. You know, Emmett had a lot of knowledge that he was giving us, and a lot of nuggets, man. Not only just on the field, but off the field as a businessman too, man. So yeah, man, it was fun playing with Emmett.
You spoke highly of Curtis Martin. What was he like?
Man, Curtis was so cool and quiet. Sometimes, man, you didn't even know if Curtis was in the room, man. Mm. But no, man, that was a cool dude.
He was a beast.
He was, man.
Yes, he was.
He sure was.
He was a monster.
You look up and he'd be rushing for 150 yards, man. 2 touchdowns on you.
Curtis, my favorite Martin.
Uh-huh.
Mm. Yes, sir.
All right. Well, hey, man, it was an honor, you know, having you on the show this week, man. I'm so thankful that you found some time to come through and kick it with us, hang out, man. Yeah. I really appreciate it.
All right, man. Sorry about the technical difficulty.
Oh, man. Hey, no problem.
But thanks for having me on, man.
Man, thanks for taking time
thanks
on coming
so much,
through,
man.
Hey, If football season starts again, we'd love to have you back.
Oh, no problem, man. We'll do it.
All right.
Appreciate that.
Okay, buddy. Y'all take care, man. All right, man.
Well, hey, man. Y'all saw y'all in the chat, man. Yeah, when we on the phone, man, we in the chat. So I saw somebody leave a comment saying, why are they always on the phone? We in the chat.
We looking for y'all.
Yeah. We talking, so... Yeah, my bad, Nate. I ain't mean to pick on the biracial folks, you know, this week.
But we will next week. What light-skinned homeboy going to do with that money now? Goddamn.
But yeah, as always, man, we appreciate you guys coming through, kicking with us, man. And Shelton got, you know, Quincy Carter.
Shelton got he got the bat signal phone. I don't know what he got, bro. You got a Rolodex like a motherfucker.
We don't know what he's going to have for us next week.
I know. So, but yeah, man. That's it, man. Quincy Carter.
Wow. Quincy Carter.
That's crazy.
I'm just now sitting back.
Yeah, man.
Quincy Carter.
But anyway, that's gonna do it for us this week. We'll catch you guys next time. We out. Peace.
Peace.